opportunities for biological science improves and so on and so forth, oftentimes we forget about the emotional impact that this actually has on people who might be benefiting in some way from this scientific development. And new research from IVI has recently revealed that a staggering 70% of British men are left feeling less masculine as a result of having to undergo fertility treatment with their partner. Now, to address this issue and a range of other factors, we're delighted to be able to welcome two of IVI's executive directors, Dr. Gillian Lockwood and Mr. Tony Rutherford. Good morning, Gillian. Good morning, Tony.
Good morning.
Gillian, if we can come to you first, because clearly we've moved on a few decades since Patrick Steptoe actually put his first steps into place, and when we had the first test tube baby and so on. IVI has become very much part of our everyday experience, and yet it still seems to be impacting men who appear, from the recent survey, are fairly vulnerable when it seems that they're being perceived as less masculine somehow.
Yes, it's very interesting research conducted by IVI in the UK found that over 70% of men were left feeling less masculine as a result of undertaking fertility treatment. And I think part of the problem here is that men confuse fertility with virility. And even though almost half of all fertility problems have a significant male factor, it's the woman who has to undergo most of the treatment. And this can leave men feeling sidelined and also unsupported. So it's vitally important that psychological support and counselling is available at all stages of a couple's fertility journey.
Is this more than just the sound of the male ego resonating across the centuries? Is it more fundamental than that? Is it something that's deep-rooted in our psyches, you feel?
Well, I think most people, even if they choose not to have children, would like to think that they have at least the option. And when a couple discovers that it's going to take something very high-tech and sophisticated like IVF to even have a chance of a baby, that can strike people at quite a fundamental level. And then, of course, there's the issue of access to treatment and the fact that IVF doesn't always work, unfortunately. So couples feel very alone, and there is a stigma attached to infertility that can make it very difficult for couples to even admit they've got a fertility problem, let alone seek help. And this is where this research conducted by IVI has shown that there's a real need for counselling support all the way through treatment.
Tony, were you surprised at all by any of these findings, or was it something that you kind of intuitively thought, well, actually, yes, nobody's really admitted to this, but there is a challenge here?
I think that we've known for a long period of time that men react very differently to infertility. They cope differently with infertility. They, you know, feel guilty if they're putting their wife through, the wife has to go through IVF treatment because it's their issue. And they often feel, because they have to provide a sperm sample, they often feel quite isolated. And, you know, it's important that this is recognised right at the start and that they're encouraged to support their wife throughout the treatment processes, to attend for ultrasound scans to help their wife with their injections, to make sure that they're there at every appointment to provide that support and make them feel that this is something that they're doing together.
We're often arguing for the importance of communication when it comes to issues, particularly relating to health and otherwise. Were there any cultural issues that might have impacted on this, or was that beyond the scope or remit of the survey?
I think that was beyond the remit of the survey. I mean, this was a huge piece of research by IVI UK. They looked at 552 individuals going through fertility treatment. And it wasn't biased by the fact that this treatment was unsuccessful, because over 400 of the people involved in the research actually were successful in their treatment.
Returning to Gillian, if the decision has been made by a couple who say, yes, we're going to actually explore the option, at least, of fertility treatments, should they also consider having clinics that actually provide psychological support very much as an essential addition to the whole process?
Yes, psychological support has been demonstrated to help the process. There was some interesting work showing that where couples disagreed about whether or not they wanted to go through treatment, then they were less likely to succeed than where the couples were united in their desire to achieve a pregnancy. And we've also found that if counselling is available and readily accessible, then couples cope better with the inevitable stresses and strains and occasional disappointments of fertility treatment.
And you've raised some of those issues and the fact that it's not guaranteed. Nothing in life, in essence, is 100% guaranteed from that point of view, apart from presumably death or taxes, but that's another issue. But in terms of advice for couples who are either maybe going through this or just deciding to go through this, from both male and female perspectives, and any particular initial tips that you provide?
Well, couples can go to the website IVI UK and find a lot of advice about how to make that decision, when is the right time to make that decision, what to expect during their treatment pathway, and also to be able to access information. There's also a guide that's been brought out just for men to help them understand the process of having fertility treatment. It's often seen as something that women read about in women's magazines, but in fact it's really important that the chaps have access to clear and information about this very important topic. After all, 1 in 7 couples end up seeking help because they have a fertility problem. So this is a really significant issue for the mental and physical health of the society.
Indeed, the importance of procreation and indeed emotional quotient as well as intelligence quotients, perhaps. Tony, finally, we mentioned one website that were there. Is there any other sort of place that you'd recommend people should actually go who have been listening to this, might have just actually had their interest piqued, or they might, say, be knowing folk who are in a similar situation or they're going through challenges themselves? Where should our listener go to for further information and details on these factors?
Apart from the website that Gillian's already mentioned, I think that the HFEA, our regulatory body, also provides very good information on their website for patients considering having fertility treatments. It covers the types of treatments available and what to look for when you're trying to choose the best clinic to help you on your way.
And allowing for the fact that from an educational point of view, repetition is always important. Can we just mention the IVI website one more time, please?
It's www.ivi.uk.
There we are. There's no excuse now. It's been a delight sharing some thoughts on a really fascinating topic. Dr. Gillian Lockwood and Tony Rutherford, many thanks indeed. Hopefully we'll speak again very soon. Take care now.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Now, let me say that we don't actually cover a range of topics and elements as far as the midweek drive is actually concerned. In no sense of the word can we be seen as sort of just limiting the whole experience. Meanwhile, if we actually press this little button here...
Singer, scholar, festival ambassador and midweek drivette. It's Eva MacDonald on the midweek drive.
Yes, Ellie, she has survived her trip to Paris. We were worried last week. Eva left the Midweek Drive Morning Edition by saying, right, I'm off to Paris now. We thought, there we are, she's never going to go back. Those French people will say, no, Brexit negotiations, you cannot have Eva MacDonald back in Lincoln until, you know, such time as things are sorted out. But they let you go.
They did. See, it was very nice. That was very sad.
Was that your first trip to Euro Disney?
It was my first trip to Paris.
First trip to Paris. Normally she goes to Cuba, she checks out various other Spanish things, but, you know, Paris is fine. Mm. And what did you bring back for the Midweek Drive Morning Edition from Paris?
You know, I'm not wearing it today. I bought, like, a Disney jumper.
Uh-huh.
And I bought some Mickey Mouse ears.
Of course. Surely Minnie Mouse would be more appropriate. Or let's not be gender specific here.
Well, I don't think ears are gender specific. I think.
And then I would have bought back some chocolate, but all the chocolate there, it was covered, it was sweets.
Mm.
And then the sweets were covered in chocolate. So there wasn't actually just any plain chocolate inside.
Sounds like a bad excuse, but chocolate would have been good for World Milk Day.
Precisely. Mm. But you did actually launch the day with a breakfast which included milk, I believe.
I did, yes.
And you were singing at Euro Disney, is that right, Eva?
Well, not properly singing, but, you know, there were there were the Disney Illuminations, and that's like a spectacular show, and they've got all the fireworks and all the songs, and I may have been belting out the tunes.
I have to say, I've only been to Disney once, and that was in Hong Kong. I went to Hong Kong Disneyland, and we stayed there the whole day. It was the best day of my life, and when we left, I cried.
Did they have a little slice of apple and a small glass of milk?
No, it was only a couple of years ago.
Well. it's just, you know, the sort of... Ellie, very quickly, what sort of things are happening with the University of Lincoln in terms of events and things you'd like to flag up over the next few weeks or so?
Some really exciting things going on. We've got the Festival of Creativity going on until the 9th of June, which obviously is all about creativity. And there's an event on the 6th of June about creativity and social innovation. We've got John Holloway, Rethinking Marx, on the 16th of June. We've got the first annual Roman lecture on the 20th of June. Then we've got Open Days, 7th and 8th of July.
Yes.
Anyone wanting to come and find out more about what it's like to study at a top 10 university in the UK should come to this campus. In fact, register, because we're already nearly booked out, actually, for our Open Days. They're very popular. There are challenge days throughout July, and these are for young people thinking about university. We're doing history, life sciences, psychology, product design, business studies, health and social care, where you undertake a challenge. And then coming up in the next academic term, we will have a new series of Great Mind speakers, including some amazing people who I can't announce just yet, but we will expect to see Dame
They've
Caroline
got minds
Duffy.
And they're great.
They are great. And anyone who's seen any of our previous speakers, who range from John Burko to Professor Lord Martin Rees to...
And the late Sir John Hurt, of course.
Oh, Sir John Hurt.
Nicholas Parsons. He was one of ours back in the day.
Nicholas Parsons is the funniest and most intelligent man.
He worked with Benny Hill. See the connection there?
He's fabulous. But there are a real range of people. We have a real range of people who come in and engage. And it's a great opportunity to listen to them, meet them, and find out what it's like to be...
And Eva, you don't even have to be part of the university to actually attend these things.
Well, I'm planning to do the French short course next year here, so I would get a student card.
See, there we
you
are.
You can come anyway. It's all right. You and everyone else.
It's all coming together.
Yeah.
We were staying in Paris to get away from your parents, and I thought, wow, if I could take this in a shot right now, I don't think that we could work this out on a terrace. I don't know if it's fair, but I thought, how could I let you fall by yourself? Well, I'm wasted with someone else. If we go down, then we go down together. They'll say you could do anything. They'll say that I was clever. If we go down, then we go down together. We'll get away with everything. Let's show them we are better. Let's show them we are better. Let's show them we are better. We were staying in Paris to get away from your parents. You look so proud, standing there with a frown and a cigarette, posting pictures of yourself on the internet, out on the terrace. We breathe in the air of this small town on our own, cutting glass with the thrill of it, getting drunk on the past we were living in. If we go down, then we go down together. They'll say you could do anything. They'll say that I was clever. If we go down, then we go down together. We'll get away with everything. Let's show them we are better.
Let's show them.
If we go down, then we go down together. We'll get away with everything. Let's show them we are better. We were staying in Paris. We were staying in Paris. We were staying in Paris.
You're listening to Siren 107.3. Good morning. Time now on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition for culinary class and gastronomic gorgeousness with the broadcasting legend, who is William Sitwell.
You see, packed with energy, William. Packed with energy just for your good self. That's because she's been taking part, Rachel, that is, in World Milk Day. Hurrah.
Always love milk.
Oh, well, there we are. In the studio, we have the Director of Communications Development and Marketing at the University of Lincoln. That is the fabulous Ellie Sample.
Hello, William. Hope you're okay.
Very well, thank you.
Good.
And fresh from her trip to Paris, where she's been wowing the French and Euro Disney with her own unique take on Let It Go, Let It... It's Eva MacDonald.
Hello.
Yeah, sensitive sort of scenario. That was just nervous hello, but yes, it's all right. I know last week he was on form, was William. Ben was so sort of taken aback by the whole thing. I think it was William's comment about...
What, by my Paris trip?
No, it was basically he hadn't had enough such fun since his grandmother passed away, really. It's gone down in one of those legendary statements. William, where do we find you today?
It was a Pete and Dud line. Do you remember there was a song?
Was.
I won't sing it now. You will know. I am very successfully working from home and looking after my children while they revise. Mm. And I'm trying to stop them from sitting in the sunshine and watching the French Open, which is tough. But, you know, I watched the French Open on Sunday at Roland Garros. Mm-hmm. That was pretty good.
Wow, yeah. Lucky you. Who was playing?
Oh, the great talent that is Team. And he'll win Wimbledon shortly, I reckon. Mm-hmm. Mark my words. Mm. You watch that talent. T-H-I-E-M.
T-H-I-E-M. Team. Not Team GB either. Sorry. Resist it. We have the Team GB coach up there. Ellie, we've talked about milk. Mm-hmm. We're talking about summer. We're talking about the fact that we're a few days away from summer. Any questions from William Sitwell? William would make a great mind. He's got a great mind. He's written the history of food in 100 recipes. He's got eggs or anarchy. He's just an all-round Renaissance man. Anyway, over to you.
Well, my question is, I've recently been doing an alkaline diet, William. I don't know if you know what that is.
No, I mean, if you were a swimming pool, I'd understand it. But human, no. I mean, I hope you're feeling good.
I am. I've lost nearly 5 stone, and I'm feeling really, really good.
Lord.
And
you want to lose 5 stone, otherwise that's a bit of an...
I did. I'd sort of done that thing, we're working sort of long hours every day.
Sandwiches.
Sitting, eating sandwiches every day and crisps and drinking fizzy drinks, had finally, over a long period of time, added a lot of weight very slowly to me. And suddenly I thought, I have to do something about this. And now I've become somewhat of a boring advocate of healthy eating. So I wondered what your healthy recipe of the day was.
My healthy recipe of the day? Well, we haven't quite had breakfast. I'll do my avocado special, which will be, I've got some fantastic properly fermented sourdough, mm-hmm. which we'll toast. And we'll have a little layer of Marmite on it. I think I've talked about this before on your
Lovely.
Show, Alex.
It's good to be repeated.
We'll have a poached egg and we'll have some avocado.
Wow.
A little flecks of some chili flakes.
Wow.
And that'll sort us out. But no, 5 stone, that's a tremendous achievement. And did you have to exercise much for that?
I didn't. To be honest, most of it was about food, but I have taken up a very vigorous fitness regime because I've also got a puppy.
Right. Well...
So,
good for you.
Yeah, I'm walking probably for an hour a day as well. And even
have you
so...
Have you stopped drinking?
No,
more those 8 pints a night.
I refuse to stop drinking.
Well, you didn't tell me you actually were aware of the sort of drinking habits of one of our premier director of communications. Amazing.
I know what these university layabouts are like with these grand titles.
A nice glass of wine never hurt anyone.
Sipping booze in your subsidised bars at the expense of the taxpayer like myself.
William, let it go. Let it go.
Otherwise,
we won't push the Snowden push 2017, which you've actually just shared in terms of under the strap line, give money to these loonies. The Snowden push 2017, aiming to raise a minimum of £50,000 for backup trust, with 10 teams taking to Mount Snowden in a race to reach the summit. And you can help the Snowden trust. So what sort of led you, William, to actually support the Snowden push 2017?
Well, my cousin, who's called Jonathan McIntosh, mm-hmm. he and some friends are pushing a friend of theirs who lost his legs Sam Snowden on a wheelchair. And I just have, I think they're crazy. I have huge admiration for them. That's a hell of a task.
So it is.
They're raising money for an important cause. So he embarrassed me the other evening by pointing out that I hadn't yet donated. So
well,
there you go.
We have duly put the thing down. In fact, I'm even going to share it, William, because that's the sort of person that we are on the Midweek Drive World Edition. It's been shared now. So there we are. Routine. And indeed, congratulations once again, Eggs or Anarchy. You've got another heavy trophy from the Fortnum & Mason Food & Drink Awards 2017. Food Book winner, William Sitwell. Wow. A round of applause for William Sitwell, please. Just once again, you know, Eggs or Anarchy, a text which is pretty darn good, if I do say so myself. All about healthy eating in many ways, William. And wartime.
Yeah. Well, you know, you just make me feel guilty because if my agent was listening, she'd be furious because I'm supposed to deliver my proposal for my next book by Monday and I haven't written a word yet. So, you know what it's like. Well, the sun's out and the tennis is on.
What about a celebration? Because it's the centenary of Armistice, isn't it? So ration books revitalised or something.
Oh, I think I've done rationing.
Oh, okay, sorry. Sorry, I'm just trying to help. I thought you wanted to sit in the sun. We were going to come up with some ideas, brainstorm, get some listener feedback. But
no, I'm going to write the ultimate alkaline diet book.
Nice. I tell you, it really works. I'll send you the details if you want it.
What foods can't you eat?
Carrots.
No carrots.
Anything with any kind of processed element. So no ham, no biscuits, obviously, no crisps, anything. It all needs to be as raw as possible, organic, lots of fresh vegetables, ideally grown in the UK. So everything is as unmessed with as possible. It's about natural, healthy eating.
And pork scratchings, right?
No, and wine, and Chablis.
So Chablis, you can drink Chablis. No carrots, but plenty of white burgundy.
And chips are okay.
Chips are fine.
Chips are fine. I mean, is there a better diet? I tell you, I was happy. Chips and Chablis.
The thing about any sample being on the show, William, is I always feel we go off on a tangent, which is just phenomenal.
Sorry.
It's important. I think, obviously, if you can cut out all that processed junk, if you can live without crisps and processed foods.
And anyone can.
People have done for centuries. The only thing is whether you're allowed preserved foods. You say no hams, but are we allowed to cure our prosciuttos up in there?
Yes. You can,
but no processed ham. Yeah. So I can have proper ham.
You can have proper ham. So
it's real food.
Real food.
It's what sustained us, and we lived for centuries without having massive obesity problems.
And kept us healthy. Obviously, limiting carbohydrate. It's not no carbohydrate, but it is limited. So sort of no bread,
no bread at all.
Well, I went for no bread, but I was celiac anyway, so that was fairly easy for me. But you can have some bread, but obviously you're better off without bread. Replace it with a nice crunchy apple or a nice juicy pear, and you can do amazing things.
Well, if I can replace bread with a nice juicy pear, I will.
As ever. it's just as well we featured Benny Hill after the Milk Council earlier this morning. You know, it just opens up a whole new routine. Honestly, we'll be doing innuendo bingo before too long. Eva, any questions from yourself?
Yes, this morning, because I'd run out of normal milk. William, what is your opinion on oat milk? Because there was some of that, but when I had it, I didn't really like it. But is it better for you than normal?
I'm a great admirer of anyone who can squeeze some milk out of an oat.
Nice.
I don't get it either.
You've lost me. I do drink a bit of almond milk.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But you know, moderation. I actually think full fat milk, that's the thing. Just a bit of it now and again. Mm. And I think the problem is too many of these new milk alternatives end up, if you actually analyse them, while they may not have lactose in them or something like that, they've got a lot of other stuff, preservatives, sugar. So you're replacing one natural product with an unnatural product. And I think that's an issue you need to look at. So, I mean, if you want to give up milk, just give up milk. The great thing about giving up milk is you can start tasting coffee and tea for the first time. Mm. And actually, if you can give up milk because you're not having too many you know, because you're giving up cereal, that's good, because they're all processed foods. But, you know, you need your calcium as a growing girl.
Yeah, you do need calcium supplements if you give up milk.
Exactly.
I forgot to have the public thank you for Ellie actually bringing a coffee to me this morning, which I've just about finished, actually. Now, that's a little bit to go, but still wonderful. It's always a pleasure and a delight, Ellie. You brought the coffee. It's wonderful. William, it's been phenomenal once again. And that breeze in the background cues in the next item, which we're doing with the head of Amazon summer sales. Yes, only a matter of days before officially Britain believes that we've reached summer when June the 4th arrives. Georgia Lee Cleland, who's the head of Amazon's Now It's Summer Store, will be joining us. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today, William Sitwell?
I have. It's sunny. I went to London last night. I went to see Annie with my kids.
Oh.
So we're a little bit sleepy. We're still singing
Tomorrow, Tomorrow.
Yeah, we're still singing Hard Knock Life and Maybe.
It's a hard knock life. Strange that that's never used as the graduation theme. Jerusalem perhaps doesn't quite have the same sort of scenario there. But, you know, maybe it's something we can think about, Elliot. Put it to Julie Gorn.
I don't know if they could play it on the organ.
I'm sure we could sign somebody up from that point of view, as I said. Next question, please, Eva.
For the last two questions.
We've had the first. Let's just go for the second.
Okay. And will we be hearing again from you soon?
Mm.
Yeah, next Thursday, Election Day.
Oh, yes, it is.
Big day.
This is it, Election Day, and also first day of the Equitrek Bramham International Horse Trials.
Mm.
It's a strange and wondrous world.
No, it's all in my mind.
Only a matter of 72 hours before officially summer kicks off, according to most folk. Sunday the 4th of June is when the British summer will really kick off this year, based on trend sales data from 2013 to 2016. And when it comes to trend sales data and the sort of things people are purchasing online, who better than the fabulous head of Amazon's Now It's Summer store? It's the amazing Georgia Lee Cleland. How are you, Georgia Lee?
I'm fantastic, thank you, Alex. How are you?
Oh, delighted to touch base with good self. In the studio, we've got Eva MacDonald and Ellie Sample, and we've been talking about summer scenarios. We don't see any hammocks mentioned in the top list. We've got indoor herb gardens, 70s hanging chairs, vitamin C serum, urban gardening essentials, children's underwater dive sticks, but a lack of hammocks. Does that surprise you?
No, we have a lot of hammocks in the garden and outdoor store and in the Now It's Summer store.
Excellent. Now, this notion that Sunday the 4th of June is when the British summer really kicks off, is that something which Amazon, I mean, is it something Jeff Bezos, when he's been working there, thinking, can I send a rocket ship around the moon, etc.? No, what would Georgia Lee actually sort of do on this particular aspect? Share with us, how have you actually developed this whole strategy in terms of what's the best thing to do to make summer special and memorable?
Yeah, so as you said, it was based on historical sales data, and that consistently the 4th of June is the day that people really start to ramp up their summer purchases.
Mm-hmm.
So the Now It's Summer campaign is our summer store offering that helps people get those summer essentials, whether it's rain or shine, and whenever they need them, really.
Wow. There we are. Ellie, you've seen the list. You've seen the hashtag Now It's Summer campaign that's actually there. And I say barbecues apparently spike in sales of 380% over the past 3 years.
Wow.
That's a lot of barbecues.
I think that tells you a lot about men. That's what I think it tells you.
It's the only time we do any cooking at all.
I know, but it only ever happens once, does it? Everyone gets really excited. They get the barbecue out. They throw sort of petrol on it, and then they incinerate some sausages.
Does this resonate with you, Georgia Lee? I mean, you know, males of the species throwing petrol on barbecues and incinerating sausages?
I think we're seeing an expansion in the range of barbecues that you can get. So whether you're looking for the kind of small portable barbecues that you can take to the park with you, or if you want one of the bigger ones because you're going to throw a shindig at home. But what we have noticed is that everybody's cooking on gas this year.
That's because everyone's old one has rusted in the garden after one use. And now they're thinking, if I had a gas one, everything would taste better, so we'll try again.
And the other things we're seeing when the sun comes out, we saw a really big increase in kind of swimming pools.
I was going to ask you, swimming pools, because they were massive last year.
Yeah. And the real sort of must-have accessory that we've noticed people are getting is the water slide, the inflatable water slide to go with the paddling pool. But my favourite product that's trending this year is the doggy paddling pool. So you can get one for the pet and one for the children
That sounds as though it could be right up your...
that would be right up my puppy's avenue.
Exactly,
yes,
the doggy paddling pool.
Yeah, I hope it's deep, though, because he's sort of the size of a small horse.
Okay, well, I've seen there's different sizes, and they seem quite robust.
So, that's good.
Clearly, Georgia Lee, you're on the case on that particular aspect. Now, one of the things about hot summers means that you can also have lots of thunderstorms, as we had over the weekend.
Yeah. Very exciting.
You can still actually sort of cope with purchasing umbrellas, anoraks and Wellington boots. What would you advise us to do, Georgia Lee, in terms of being fully prepared? And we're also coming up to the summer season with respect to, obviously, we mentioned the Equitrek Bramham horse trials. We've got the Lincolnshire show coming up. We've got all sorts of other factors. How do you keep it together, Georgia Lee?
Yeah, and that's a really good question. So we do have lots of products that are there for the wet weather, the umbrellas, as you mentioned, and the wellies. But we've also got some practical things like waterproof cameras if you're going to a festival, water-resistant speakers if you're having a party out in the garden, because, as you say, the weather in Britain can be really unpredictable. Mm-hmm. For me, it's all about self-watering plant pots. So I got really excited a few weeks ago when the sun first came out, getting the garden ready, getting some new flowers out there, and then Mother Nature changed her mind and kind of poured it down in rain on my garden and even broke some of the flowers. So that's my must-have for the season, is to get some smart plant pots that will water the plants when they need watering and not when the sun's out. Like it is today.
Although we would add to that, don't use that as an excuse for not speaking to your plants, because otherwise they'll feel lonely. They feel they don't care anymore. They let me water myself. You know, they're trying to push me out of the nest, so to speak. This is not them. Eva, any questions for yourself?
I was going to ask how it is over there with the weather, but I think we've already asked that, really.
All the ways down in London, really, exactly. I presume it's Georgia Lee's right in the bosom of a recording studio. Bless her heart, she probably doesn't know. Rachel will probably report to her. She'll let us know how the weather is. It's a long day. Georgia, in terms of Amazon's four principles, customer obsession rather than competitor focus, passion for invention, commitment to operational excellence, and long-term thinking. Have we reached the stage yet where some of these goods will be delivered by a drone to us, or is that something which is coming up in 2018?
Well, for now, depending where you are in the country, you can get products delivered within the hour with Prime now.
That doggy might not have to wait too long swimming pool within the hour.
I am intrigued by the drones, though. I mean, are the drones going to come to your front door, and could you grab one and steal it?
Unfortunately, I'm not.
She's not a specialist. She's not a specialist in drones.
I'm really sorry, Georgia Lee. I'm really sorry. It's just, you know, it's very interesting.
Well handled, I thought. Very good. It worked through that basis. Clearly, if we say, where do you go to for more information, I suspect we know the website you're going to recommend, Georgia Lee. But what the hate? Why don't you share it with us anyway?
That would be amazon.co.uk/ Now It's Summer.
Exactly. And it's say forward slash the forward slash long summer. Now it's summer. That's exactly it. The
whole summer. Now it's summer.
Excellent news.
Brilliant. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today? This is our customer research, Georgia Lee. Has it been okay for you?
Yes, this has been fantastic.
Well, that's good. And can we look forward to connecting with you again? I don't know, hopefully when we have hashtag now it's autumn. You know,
Maybe.
Exactly. Well, there are four seasons in the year, of course, and sometimes in the British summer they occur in the one day. Round of applause for Georgia Lee. Cleland, yay! Head of Amazon's Now It's Summer store.
Thank you, Alex.
See, if you're actually one of the aficionados who pays attention to the tunes that we play in betwixt the features, you might have some reason and rationale for why Donna Summer and Hot Stuff was featured after our
I'm with you, Alex.
Yes, nice. Nicely done, Ellie. As a Doctor Who fan and a Peter Capaldi fan, more to the point, unlike Eva MacDonald, who gave up after David Tennant. It's all right, you know. You may have one or two things to share with our Doctor Who scholar and specialist from the Forest of Dean. It's the amazing Alan Stevens. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Let's cut straight to the quick. Ellie, what have you made of the series so far, the seven episodes we've
had? I am loving it. I'm absolutely loving it. I can't believe that after 40 years, I'm still loving Doctor Who, and it gets better and better every year. Why is the Doctor blind? Will he recover? What is happening?
Technically, he has recovered at the end
he
of the last episode.
Has he? I thought that was short term. Is that it? Is he better now?
Yeah, apparently.
Oh, okay. Well, that ruined that question. Yeah. I obviously didn't do the right research.
But it opens up a whole range of scenarios there. Alan, as we head into the pyramid at the end of the world, and indeed we head out of the pyramid at the end of the world, is it still floating your boat? Because I think unlike previous series that Stephen Moffat has put together for Peter Capaldi, this one seems to be getting higher scores from your good self.
Really?
I think so, yes.
Are you not liking it?
No, I'm just surprised what you just said. I mean, I quite like Capaldi the first series, actually.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
So I thought probably that might have been scoring higher.
Well, you know. Anyway, let's talk about them now. Let's talk about living in the moment. Let's keep in terms of that TARDIS scenario. How's it going for yourself?
Well, okay, on one level, the storyline is bizarrely very similar to The Mechanical Planet, the CD I recently wrote featured the Daleks, and the idea that... you know, people face a threat, and then they are given, you know, a group come along and say, we can deal with this threat.
I did notice that, Alan, actually. Of course, the Mechanical Planet CD, part of Warp Warp magazine's fourth edition, still available for the discerning and well worth accessing.
I did think it was quite like The Matrix, though.
But, oh, yeah, Robert, it stole a great... Especially the previous episode when they had this recreate. I mean, the idea is that they recreate the world within a sort of computer program and examine it. And say, okay, at some point, this is going to happen, and it's going to cause a worldwide pandemic, but we can stop this if you agree that we then take control of your world. And people go, oh, well, I don't want to die, I'd rather be under, you know, a dictatorship or whatever.
Give consent. Consent must be freely given.
And they want the idea of people, you know, not doing it, not saying, oh, yeah, we agree, because they're, you know, a military, you know,
because we're afraid,
They do it because they genuinely want this thing and will generally, you know, give their soul and heart and soul to the cause. So what happens with the eyesight thing is that the doctor solves a bizarre idea that a laboratory would eject the atmosphere out into, you know, any harmful bacteria out into the outside. You know, and there's no way of stopping it unless you actually just blow the laboratory up. That seemed a bit of a bizarre plotting idea, to be honest.
Yeah,
the doctor's,
yeah.
The doctor's trapped behind a metal door, and he can't see the key code because he's blind, and so she says to these things, okay, well, we'll agree with you if you can allow the doctor to see so he can see the code and escape. And therefore they do, with some magical foo-foo. And they, of course, the world is now under control of sort of strange, the monks or whatever they're called, aren't they?
I suppose that was what got me. I suppose that was what actually has confused me then, because I assumed, because they were just alien creatures, that they couldn't restore his sight for good, but that they could sort of...
I think you're probably getting confused with the previous episode where his sight is restored, but then, of course, he's not really him. It's a Matrix doll or computer animation version of him, so his sight wasn't restored. I can see how it can be a bit confusing, but yeah, this entire sight thing leads up to the idea that Bill will make this deal with the aliens, and so it's kind of I think it's probably like a three-part story or something. I don't know.
And winding down to the end of Peter Capaldi, isn't it?
Yeah, but I'm not sure how it all factors in. The trouble is, you can't... For various reasons, I can't go into it at the moment. I've been rewatching Blake 7.
Oh, yeah.
Which is the TV series from the
1970s. I love Blake 7. Servalan and...
Travis and Avon and whatnot.
Yeah, they were fabulous.
Yes, and I've actually... since Sunday, I've gone through about 17 episodes, which is all of season 1 and a chunk of season 2 as well, and I'm going to carry on. Because when you watch, sometimes... To write for something, you need to work out how it works. Do you see what I'm saying? And you see repeated tropes and repeated ideas and themes of it. And finally, you get to a sort of crisis point. You think, well, I can write any episode of this show because I know it so well. And so I basically just... I'd written a book on Blake 7 back in 2003. And then they released the DVDs a few years later. And as I sort of was sick to death of Blake 7 having done this book, I didn't buy them.
Yeah.
And then I saw them all fairly cheaply recently in a shop, and I thought, oh, actually, you know,
are they as good the second time around?
Well, I bought all 40 seasons and didn't watch them, and then this thing came up where I'm obliged to write something for it. Mm-hmm. So I started for episode 1. I've worked up from up to the fourth episode or fifth episode of season 2, mm-hmm. and I think it's great. I think it's amazing. I've seen a lot of TV. Recently, of that vintage 70s, you know, War and Peace, a very good series called Wings, which is about the Flying Corps in World War One, a Sweeney, a lot of programs, Secret Army, and I have to say that Blake 7 certainly compares to that. So I mean, you can, from the standards or technical standards of 40 years later, basically, some of the effects look of the time, but at that time and watching it, you know, within the context of TV at that time, it looks perfectly okay. And the characters are very well drawn. Great dialogue in it. Mm. And one thing I will say is that although there is an arc to the seasons, there is also the stories are self-contained. So, you know, I think if someone tuned into Doctor Who next week, they wouldn't really have an idea of what was going on unless it's in the two previous stories. But within Blake 7, you know, have a 50-minute story, and it is a self-contained story. And there may be certain, you know, references back, and there may be certain setups of plots to come. But, they are contained. And I kind of like that better, really, than this sort of ongoing thing where, you know, it's a bit like a soap opera, really, you know.
Yeah.
It's certainly with Doctor Who even worse than other shows where, you know, effectively, unless you, you can watch 7 or 8 episodes, and you could then say, well, can you name those episodes and tell me what happened? And because it's ongoing threads, you can't. Mm. It's like you know, saying, well, because it has this sort of soap opera ongoing thread thing, so it's more amorphous. So, you know, to be honest, I think that I'd expected to rewatch Blake 7 back and think, well, the effects aren't too good on this, and this looks a bit shabby. But to be honest, it stood up very well.
Well, it was
fabulous. And I think the story, I think the writing stood up very well. And I think that, you know, obviously not every single episode was great. There were some problems, but, you know, it was, you know, I kind of think it compares better.
But looking back, Alan, I mean, it had 10 million viewers per episode, didn't it? I mean, Blake, from memory, was a bit of a Robin Hood character. Is that right? He was a bit of a dissenter who'd sort of chartered this spaceship and it was almost Brave New World in a way.
Yeah, well, it was a sort of, it has a strange feel to it, Blake 7. It feels like a show, it feels like it's set in a, you know, I mean, obviously, there were certain, I suppose when you watched it in 78, it would have felt contemporary to the time. Mm. And then, of course, if you watch the 1980s, it would look quite dated. Mm. But now we're about 39 years away. Mm. It just looks otherworldly. And there's some weirdness about the show, and it feels like they're in a universe where, you know, it is very empty, you know, and almost medieval. Like, you know,
and
the
costume. On that point, Alan, we have to say that has brought us to the conclusion of the 2 hours that has been the Midweek Drive Morning Edition. You see, Eva, Blake 7, Doctor Who, a whole range of things there. Thanks to Gabriella Peralta in Gibraltar, Richard Fitzwilliams, Dr. Anne Mullen from the Dairy Council, Matt Lawson from Team GB, Ian Lennox, Alan Stevens, William Sitwell, Georgia Lee Cleland, and, of course, your good self, Alan Stevens. Have you enjoyed the programme, Ellie?
I've loved it. It's been fabulous, Alex. You're an absolute star.
Oh, back again in the near future.
Oh, yes, definitely.
Yeah, bring her back again so we can talk about Watch Blake 7.
sorry to the listener. Sorry.
Alan, we salute you as ever. We will speak again in the very near future, assuming you've had a reasonably okay time.
Yeah, I quite enjoyed that, yeah.
There we are, you see. And Eva, have you enjoyed your segment?
Of course. Marvellous. Been here.
Heaps of good stuff coming up through the course of the day here on Sion FM. Plus, of course, after 7 o'clock this evening, Sound and Nick's Vision emerges once again with Nick Elliott, Sue Royce, and a whole heap of others working through that process. AC/DC Back in Black take us out of the programme. You can find out about Ellie's wonderful work at the University of Lincoln by going to lincoln.ac.uk. All sorts of marvellous things work on that basis. You can find out about Alan's work on caldorcity.com, Magic Bullet Productions, and more. That's it. Can we all say bye-bye?
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.